It's Mike McEntee. Congratulations. You have survived another week of the Trump administration. It is Friday. It is the last Friday of the year. It is 3 degrees out, and that is the warmest it's going to be here for like the next 2 or 3 days. So the warmest it's going to be for the rest of the year. Oh, my gosh. Brett, you've given up on riding your bike to the station now. I hope by now, right?
Even if I had those big snow tires, I would not be out there. 35 degrees is kind of my limit.
It's your limit? Okay. Okay. There's all sorts of, not for the Twin Cities, but good grief, it is still cold enough here, but there's all sorts of warnings out for northern Minnesota, Stearns County, a lot of places that this is just going to get, as we say, fugly tonight and through the rest of the weekend. So please bundle up, folks. Don't go someplace unless you you have reliable transportation. This is nothing to sneeze at. This is some pretty wretched weather we've got out there. And if you are going out for a New Year celebration, make sure that you're going to have a warm coat, warm gloves, and don't stay out too long. Brett, you've got plans for New Year's? You going to go have some fun, or you don't have to work at the station? Not working.
Yeah, that's the good part. I'm not working at the station, fortunately, but I'm not going out, as people are coming to my place instead. So they're the ones that have to figure out what to do with transportation and all that stuff with the cold.
Okay. All right. So I'm not sure what we're going to do yet. We usually end up someplace, you know, some bar or someplace, you know, listening to one of my friends playing music. I don't know if we'll do that this year. So, somebody's got a suggestion. Let me know. We have no plans yet for New Year's Eve. This is our last show of the year. So we've kind of got our own sort of year in review that we're going to do. We have our game show, That Was the Year That Wasn't. We revive what was our weekly game show. We haven't played it a lot recently, but we're going to revive it for one more time this year and let you guess what headlines are real and which ones were not. Something that's become increasingly harder to do. We have no prizes. We're going to play for pride. It's going to be probably about in a half hour. We're going to ask you to call in at 952-946-6205. And then the news. As he prepares to resign, Senator Al Franken was in Minnesota last night thanking his supporters.
Here's my promise to you. I may be leaving the Senate, but I'm not giving up my voice.
We're going to hear more from Senator Franken and about what's next in his life a little bit later in the show. But the really big breaking news here of the day is coming out of Minneapolis here and the courts. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and two other entities who had sued the city of Minneapolis last month over the plan to raise minimum wage to $15 an hour have now pulled out of the lawsuit. The chamber initially filed the lawsuit in November, asking for a temporary injunction to stop the minimum wage from going into effect. But the chamber withdrew its involvement yesterday, along with the Twin West Chamber of Commerce and the Minnesota Recruiting and Staffing Association. Now only the Northeast Minneapolis-based Graco Inc. remains in the lawsuit. And chamber officials said, though, so don't get your hopes up here, though, that this is not the end of the challenge to raising the minimum wage. Chamber's officials said they intend to continue pushing for uniform labor standards at the legislature and, if necessary, the courts. So uniform labor standards is another way of saying, if we can, we should be able to pay the same thing all over the state, which means in Minneapolis, where the cost of living is a little bit higher and we're trying to do some things, we're going to prevent that. So this is, subverting local control, something that businesses and Republicans typically try to avoid doing. But when it comes to the minimum wage, hey, all bets are off. The logic being that, quote, businesses spend less time complying with laws and more time innovating and creating jobs. I can tell you that once you know what you're paying somebody, it's not that hard to pay them that amount. Even if you have a branch in Minneapolis and a branch in International Falls, there's these things called spreadsheets and computer programs. It's pretty simple these days. Now, Minneapolis became the first Midwestern city to adopt a $15 minimum $15 an hour minimum wage in June, when the city council approved the ordinance that phases in the wage over several years. So it's not going up immediately. Other cities across the country, including Seattle, San Francisco, and Washington, D.C., have also adopted the $15 an hour minimum wage. St. Paul is considering doing the same. Minnesota right now has an hourly minimum wage. It's $9.50 for large employers. That's employers who have more than $500,000 of revenue a year or more, and $7.75 for small employers. Now, all those rates are going to go up in 2018. And Minneapolis, its ordinance goes into effect here, I believe, on the first of the year, and that's when the incrementally things start going up. So under the Minneapolis ordinances, large businesses with those with 100 or more employees must phase in the $15 minimum wage by July 1st of 2022. That's a ways off. And small businesses still have until July 1st of 2024. Now, the other interesting news here today is that the Republican state senator poised to become Minnesota's next lieutenant governor says she would rather run for her Senate seat if she's forced out of office. Says she will run for her Senate seat if she's forced out of office. Now, the questions surround who is going to replace Lieutenant Governor Tina Smith once she is sworn into the U.S. Senate next week. The Constitution says it should be the current Senate President Michelle Fischbach, who is a Republican. But Fischbach's plan to retain her Senate seat has Democrats promising a lawsuit seeking to force her out of office, and that would put control of the Senate up for grabs, because right now Republicans hold a 34-33 majority. And Fischbach told KSTP yesterday that she would run for her Senate seat in a special election if she's removed by court order. She said she'd resign as Governor Mark Dayton's lieutenant governor. That's interesting, because when it was first revealed that Dayton was picking Smith and Fischbach would eventually become the lieutenant governor, she held a news conference. I went to it, and she spent a lot of time talking about how little the lieutenant governor actually did. So I asked her if she even wanted the job.
It sounds like this is a role that you're not going to be doing much in. Why do you want the job then?
Because the Constitution says shall. So it's not a want, it's a constitutional duty.
But do you want the job, I guess is the question.
I don't necessarily think that is something that is up for discussion, because there's a constitutional duty I have that says shall.
Does this put you into the mix for the 2018 gubernatorial race?
I have not thought that far ahead.
Yeah, and she's at least thought it through enough now that she really doesn't want the job if she has to choose between being Senator Fischbach and President of the Senate, as that's what she is right now, and Lieutenant Governor Fischbach. So given the choice, she wants to remain Senator. We'll have to see how that plays out. Now, of course, this has all been triggered off by Senator Al Franken announcing that he is going to resign. He is resigning next week, effective January 2nd, after multiple women made allegations of sexual misconduct against him. Last night, he spoke to supporters in Minneapolis. He talked about what it was like to go from being a comedian to being a senator.
But I wasn't a professional politician. I'd never done anything like this before. I didn't know what to expect, and of course, neither did Minnesotans. People knew that I was passionate about the issues, but they didn't know if I was serious about the work. They knew what I believed in, but they didn't know whether they could believe in me. All these years later, I am deeply proud of the work that I've been able to do on Minnesotans' behalf.
Woo!
And then Franken talked about what happens next. And here it is.
Here's my promise to you. I may be leaving the Senate, but I'm not giving up my voice. We still have a lot of work to do together on issues ranging from net neutrality to climate change.
Broadband.
More rural broadband, you can. Becky, you can't go wrong with rural broadband. Every person in this country should have access to the internet for as learning and for business and rural broadband. That's what I'm saying. I'm ashamed I left it out at that part. And we still have to be ready to speak out for economic justice and to defend the truth.
Franken talked a lot about the progress that was made while he was senator, including passage of the Affordable Care Act and many other issues, both large and small. And he's asked his supporters, to keep that in mind as they go forward, because there's a lot of work that's still ahead for everybody that's in the progressive movement.
Thinking about politics that way makes the progress that we've made feel worth the hard work that it took to achieve it, and it makes the challenges we still face seem less insurmountable. And when I think about the last decade or so of my life through the lens of the people I've met, the people I've had the privilege to work alongside of, the people whose lives I've had the honor of fighting to improve, I feel hopeful for the future of our country. I feel proud to call this state my home and to call so many of you my friends. I feel grateful beyond words for the support that you have shown me and for the trust that you have placed in me and for the chance you took on me. I feel the same way I did growing up all those years ago in St. Louis Park, like the luckiest kid in the world. Thank you all.
And that was Al Franken last night speaking to supporters in Minneapolis. Al Franken will formally resign from the Senate on Tuesday, January 2nd. Money and politics. Everybody agrees we need to get out of it, yet Congress is working in a way that would allow even more money in. Coming up here next on the show, we're going to talk with the Center for American Progress about that. And after that, get ready to call in and play our news game. You get to do what Donald Trump often can't do. Tell truth from fiction. In our That Was a Year That Was. That's all coming up here a little bit later on our program here on AM 950.
Hi, this is Norman Goldman from my favorite Minneapolis furniture store, Habitation Furnishing and Design. Let me ask you a question. Do you enjoy your home? Does your furniture make you comfortable? Are you proud to have guests over? With the long winter months shutting us all in and the holidays fast approaching, I encourage you to visit Habitation St. Louis Park Showroom to see what potential awaits. Let Habitation help you craft a space that makes your home the place to be this holiday season. Check them out at HabitationDesign.com. Tell them Norman Goldman sent you.
One Voice Mixed Chorus, Minnesota's LGBTA chorus, returns to the Ordway Concert Hall for Sanctuary, an unforgettable evening of choral music celebrating the music of immigrants who make Minnesota home, including Scandinavian, German, Irish, Mexican, Hmong, and Somali. One Voice will also perform You Will Be Found for Broadway's Dear Evan Hansen and I Come From Good People. That's at the Ordway Concert Hall Friday, January 19th and Sunday, January 21st. Call 651-224-4222 or check out onevoicemn.org for tickets today.
Seasteads, the family-owned flooring business that's been serving the Twin Cities for 100 years, has plenty of carpet and sheet vinyl stock to choose from and can help you with your wood and laminate needs too. Seasteads will come to your home, provide a free estimate, and professionally install their quality brand-name flooring products. For your next flooring project, call the trusted, experienced experts at Seasteads 651-224-5474, located across from the new Saints Stadium and online at seasteadscarpet.com.
Hello, this is Ellen Krug from Hidden Edges Radio. When I'm not on the radio, I'm standing in front of audiences training about diversity and inclusion and on how to be welcoming to others who are different from us. More than ever, employers and organizations need professional diversity and inclusion training. I can offer that training through my company, Human Inspiration Works, LLC. I'd love to make your workplace or organization more welcoming. For more information, go to humaninspirationworks.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show. If you thought money in politics was bad after the Citizens United decision, brace yourself, for it's about to get worse, possibly. Buried in an appropriation bill is a clause that could make politicians even more reliant on big donors and ignore the voices of everyone else. Joining me to talk about that is Alex Tasanovich from the Center for American Progress. Alex, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
So tell us first, before we get into what the law might be, let's talk about what the law is. What does current law say about campaign donations?
Sure. Well, we have a lot of problems in our current campaign finance law. We have a few pillars that are still intact. And one of those is that direct contributions to candidates are limited. A wealthy donor can only give $2,700 to a candidate each election cycle. And the reason we have that limit is to prevent large contributions from potentially influencing how politicians and candidates do their job. So it's an important protection against corruption, and it's one that has survived Citizens United and continues to be in place. There, on the other hand, political parties have significantly higher limits. You can currently give a political party $1.2 million, actually at the minimum, and that has been created by changes in the law and by court decisions following Citizens United. So what this bill would do is it would allow candidates and political parties to work much more closely together so that a donation to the political party is more like a donation to the candidate.
So, I mean, how much money does flow into political campaigns from big donors these days? Because we're looking at you've got a limit there for the candidate of several thousand dollars. But have people been exploiting the donate to the party or donate to another group and sending millions of dollars in? I mean, I can't do something like that, I know.
Right. So, you know, $2,700 is already out of reach for most people in terms of income that they have available to just give to a candidate. It's a lot of money. What you're seeing now is we do have a lot of money being spent on politics. It's in the low billions of dollars each election cycle. But the thing that concerns me is not the absolute amount so much as the fact that increasingly large shares of that amount are being given in large chunks by big donors. And smaller amounts of that are coming from small donors, people like you and me. We're giving $50, $100 to the candidate of their choice.
So, Alex, tell us about what will change with the law that's being considered right now in Congress.
What will change is that currently, if I'm a wealthy donor and I give a $1 million check, for example, to a political party, the political party can't then turn around and give that $1 million to a candidate or spend it in cooperation with the candidate. And the reason that is because we don't want to get around those $2,700 limits by having a big donor say, I'm going to give this money to the political party, but I'm going to tell them, spend it on your behalf. Essentially, it's an end around that we're trying to avoid. And this bill would weaken the rules that put a wall in place between that $1 million donation to a party and the limits on what you can give to a candidate.
So then what's the impact going to be? Does it mean that the people who give big money are going to have more influence? Is that the upshot of all of this?
Absolutely. What it means is that now, you know, not now, but if this provision is incorporated into the final version of the bill, what will happen is a donor who wants to give a lot of money to a candidate and have them influence how they review legislation can say, here's my $1 million check. I'm not giving it to you, I'm giving it to the political party, but I'm going to tell them to more or less do with it what you tell them to. And so it'll be a lot like just giving that money directly to the candidate. And that's a problem because as we've seen recently with congressional priorities, they tend to be prioritizing the interests of big donors over ordinary people. The tax bill, I think, is a great example of this, where you have lots and lots of tax breaks for wealthy individuals, for people who own stock, for people who are inheriting very large estates of over $5 million. And you're only seeing temporary tax breaks on a much smaller scale for you and me. And a few members of Congress admitted point blank that one of the big impacts on them in passing this tax bill was their donors were saying, hey, if you don't pass this, I'm not going to give you any more money. That's going to be a lot worse when an individual donor can give $1 million to essentially give it to a candidate instead of giving them only $2,700.
We're speaking with Alex Chesanovich from the Center for American Progress. We're talking about a bill pending in Congress that might change some of the ways that money gets to candidates. And in your article, you write that there's a poll that shows nearly all Americans, 96%, you say, think that money is partly to blame for political dysfunction. Is there any chance that Congress is going to take note of that and reverse its course? Or are we just, this is pretty much a slam dunk, this is what's going to happen, we're going to make it worse?
Well, look, I certainly hope that Congress will change its course. It's, you know, as you said, polls show that overwhelmingly, I mean, basically everybody thinks that money is a problem in politics, and it's fairly obvious why. But there have been some positive signs. There are some small pieces of legislation that have bipartisan sponsors that would make positive steps rather than making things worse. There are a number of leaders in Congress who have been talking about serious campaign finance reform and other kinds of political reform. So I'm hopeful that if people keep speaking out about this issue, that we'll be able to make some progress. What we've heard from the members of Congress who are trying to roll back the rules and remove the protections is they say, hey, look at all these outside groups. Look at these super PACs and these nonprofits that are spending lots of money sort of outside of the formal system of campaigns, and they're spending a lot of money without telling you where that money is coming from. We need to raise our limits so that we can compete with them. And I think we should be doing just the opposite. I think we should be saying those outside groups, the nonprofits, the super PACs, the big donors who are working outside the system, we should require full disclosure so that we know where all of that money is coming from. And we shouldn't be weakening the system we have in place to prevent more direct kinds of corruption, like six-figure checks being given to candidates.
I mean, a lot of this started with Citizens United because the Supreme Court said that free speech is equal to money or money is equal to free speech, and therefore you cannot limit it or it's hard to regulate it. Until that changes and until we get to maybe where the public is funding campaigns, it seems like everything here is incremental, and we're still going to be fighting, you know, having large donors having large influence over what's going on in Congress and the rest of us really not mattering.
Well, so 2 points there, Mike. One is that Citizens United was really a big step in the wrong direction, but the step in the wrong direction that it took was with regard to these outside groups. You still can't give money directly to candidates, and that's important. That's a pretty significant protection against corruption, and that's worth defending, I think. As long as we have a system where you can only give a certain amount of money to candidates, that $2,700, we at least have some protection against corruption. And on the other point, on the larger problem that Citizens United created, this problem of large donations going through sort of these outside sources that are called Americans for America and running a lot of negative ads using a lot of donor contributions. It's a very serious problem, and it's one that we need to address, but we do have solutions that can help to address it. We can have more disclosure. We can try to help empower small donors through citizen-funded elections by giving individual donors vouchers that they can use. And in fact, I believe they have those vouchers in Minnesota for statewide races. You can get a refund for a $50 donation to a candidate. And that helps empower ordinary people who can afford to give reasonable-sized, small donations. And it makes their voices more significant. And it helps have a system that's more fair and that isn't quite as dominated by these big dollar spenders.
So there is hope. It's not hopeless. That's good to hear.
that's definitely true. There are a whole lot of things that we can and should be doing to make the system better. Public financing is one, disclosure is one, and dealing with the influence of lobbyists is another. We CAP recently released a report where we suggested that you shouldn't allow lobbyists to be able to hold these big fundraisers where they collect a big pile of checks and hand that pile of checks to the candidates. That's another way currently that they get around the rules. And you saw some of these fundraisers happening in conjunction with the tax bill, where tax lobbyists were raising a bunch of money for candidates. There was one reported in Nantucket where Paul Ryan was the guest of honor, and a prominent tax lobbyist collected a bunch of contributions and gave them all to Paul Ryan. Now, that's clearly, most people would see that as a conflict of interest. He has corporate clients who want things in the tax bill, and they're pooling their resources to try and influence a very important sitting member of Congress. We can prohibit that activity. We can say, hey, if you're a lobbyist, you can still give your $2,700 like everyone else, but you shouldn't be able to fundraise for candidates and pool those resources and present them as your effort on behalf of the candidate.
Okay.
So there's definitely a lot of problems, but there are also a lot of things we can do.
Well, Alex, I appreciate your time today. Alex is with the Center for American Progress. You can find more about that over at AmericanProgress.org. Alex, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Well, up next on the Mike McEntee Show, we're asking you to call in and play our news game. Can you tell me what did and did not really happen this year as we play our game called That Was the Year That Wasn't? We have no prizes, just pride. The number is 952-946-6205. Again, that's 952-946-6205 if you want to be a contestant. That's all, of course, after this week's Art Beat with Lori Fitz.
This week's Art Beat of the Week brings you the skinny on the 17th annual 24-hour Extreme Theater Smackdown, brought to us by Theater Unbound, the Women's Theater. Mark your calendars for Saturday, January 13th at 8 p.m. to attend this artistically athletic, crazy smackdown. Winter blues beware with this radical way to create theater. In less than 24 hours, 6 plays will be written, rehearsed, and performed by teams of local playwrights, directors, and actors, each racing against the clock. The night before the show, 6 pairs of writers will receive a set of ingredients, which must be included in their scripts. These variables include an emotion, a line of dialogue, a prop, and a stage direction. The next morning, the newly written scripts will be assigned to a director and cast who will rehearse throughout the day until showtime. As in previous SmackDowns, the ingredients used in the plays are determined by a public vote, said Ann Bertrams, executive director of Theater Unbound. This year, for the first time, 4 renowned artistic directors will be submitting ingredients for the show. Michelle Hensley, 10,000 Things, Wendy Knox, Frank Theater, Kate Powers, The Redeeming Time Project, and Sarah Rasmussen, The Jungle Theater, have all agreed to contribute their creative ideas to the project. SmackDown fans will have a chance to vote on which ingredients will be selected in an online poll leading up to the date of the show. The 24-hour Extreme Theater Smackdown will take place at Stepping Stone Theater. Go to theaterunbound.com to buy your tickets. And while you're there, vote for which ingredients you'd like to see in each of the plays. All this is brought to you by Theater Unbound. Theater Unbound delivers thought-provoking theater that is conceived and created by women, providing audiences with rarely seen glimpses on issues that are relevant to all perspectives. Since 1999, Theater Unbound has produced theater by women artists, stimulating communities to change the way they view gender roles. The Smackdown is about to go down, and it is a wild way to spend an evening of art in the making. Crazy good fun. So, again, mark your calendars for Saturday, January 13th at 8 p.m. at the Stepping Stone Theater. Buy your tickets by going to theaterunbound.com and be part of the action by voting for which ingredients you'd like to see in each of the plays. That's Art Beat for the Week. I'm Lori Fitz from Connections Radio Show, airing live Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin, wherever you are and however you like it, we're just the place you're looking for. Six unique, fun, exciting, winning destinations located throughout central Wisconsin. Make your rounds to Wittenberg, Nakusa, Black River Falls, Toma, Madison, or Wisconsin Dells for the hottest slots, most exciting games, award-winning guest service, delicious food and spirits, lodging, and live entertainment. Join the Ho-Chunk Gaming Rewards Club for free. And with a single card, you can earn valuable points no matter which of the six locations you choose to play. That means more exclusive offers, giveaways, cash back, discounts, and much more. Visit us online to see all we have to offer and find the fun times nearest you at HoChunkGaming.com. So wherever you are and however you like it, we're just the place you're looking for. Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin, Wittenberg, Nakusa, Black River Falls, Toma, Madison, and Wisconsin Dells.
Experience the difference. Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin.
Must be 21 or over to play.
Hey, Minnesota, Norman Goldman here. Catch me live every weeknight from 5 to 8 p.m. right here on AM 950. Whether it's a recap of the day's news, legal analysis, or teaching civics, justice is always served on the Norman Goldman Show. Today on the show, pardon my voice, but I'm resting my voice. It's Friday, December 29th. We are shut down. The crew has the weekend off. I'm in bed. By all means, have a great holiday. We are back January the 2nd. Have a great new year.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for partly cloudy skies tonight with a low of 13 below. Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 4 below. Sunday, sunny with a high of 5 below. And New Year's Day, Monday, sunny with a high of 0.
Which appliance store has more of everything you want? Over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners believe it's the specialists at Warner Stellion. We guarantee never to be beat on price. Ask one of our customers to rate our free delivery, appliance installation, and recycling services. Go to WarnerStellion.com to learn more.
Everybody knows what I'm saying is true.
Masterminds behind the Bowling Green Massacre.
This was the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration, period.
If I'm not right, I'm the first to admit that I'm not right.
Hey, you hear that, you know what it means. It is time for us to play That Was the Week That Wasn't. And since it is the last show of the year, it's the That Was the Year That Wasn't. It's your chance to call in at 952-946-6205 and play the game. Be our contestant. There is no prize here. There, you know, it's just for pride. It's just for fun. We've done this a couple times this year. I think like three or four. Done this before, Brent.
You can tell it's been a while since those clips are desperately outdated that I have on that open music. I need to update that, don't I?
Yeah, you do. You do. I'm sure you can. I'm sure with all the craziness that has happened here this year, you can probably find some additional clips to put in there. But you get the idea that this is some of the crazy stuff that's happened this year. 952-946-6205 is the number if you want to get involved here at AM 950. We have, I guess, to get us started here, because we haven't done this for a while, we've asked Hunter Hawes, who is who usually is working the board, but he has the day off, except we're making him work to play the quiz today. Hey, Hunter, are you on the line with us?
Hello.
Hello, Hunter.
Hi, I'm ready.
You're ready. Okay, we dragged you into this today. this is just, you know, and again, if somebody else wants to participate, you know, we will bring them in too. It's 952-946-6205. But first, since you are familiar with the game and you are with the station, I have to make you swear and affirm I have not given you the answers ahead of time, correct?
Nope, you have not given me the answers.
And Brett, I haven't given you the answers either, right?
No, I've signed a sworn oath. There's lots of big punishments if I break it, so no, I have not given out those answers.
Okay, all right. So here we go. Here's the very first question here. Trump's UN ambassador, Nikki Haley, confirms that the U.S. is, quote, watching very closely the issues around the island of Bonomo, a fictional island. Is that true or false?
Hmm. I am going to say that's true.
Yes, it is apparently true. Haley was pranked last week by a pair of Russian comedians who called her. This is pretty weird. One of them pretended to be the Polish prime minister. And in a recorded posted recently on the internet, a man posing as the prime minister asked Haley about the fictional island of Bonomo in the South China Sea. He says, "You know Bonomo?" And Haley says, "Yes, yes." And he says, "They had elections, and we suppose the Russians had its intervention." "Yes, they did, absolutely," Haley replies. "We've been watching that very closely." yeah, and then they tried to get a hold of the State Department about that, and they don't want to comment on that for whatever reason. Okay, all right. So you got
recently.
That happened just this past week, so that's as fresh false news. okay, so I've got this one's multiple choice. I've got which one of these three things did Donald Trump not do? Okay, so I've got three things for you. So you got to wait till we get all through all three of them. Number one, criticized Barack Obama for playing too much golf during his time this year, and then spend more days than Obama did on the golf course. Number two, claimed that he invented the phrase fake news. Or number three, claimed that he is of Irish descent. Which one of those is it that he did not do?
Did not claim Irish descent.
That is correct. He did not claim he of Irish descent, but... you see, in his book, Donald Trump, The Art of the Deal, he claimed that he had Swedish descent. His father came to America as a boy from Sweden. But, of course, that's a lie. Researchers found the Swedish origins was just a story invented by Trump's father during the middle of the 19th century. Trump's true descendancy was German, which, of course, was simply bad for business. Okay. You ready here, Hunter? I didn't give you the. You got that one correct.
Now it's all official. Right. Yes.
Now it's official. So you're two for two. You ready here for the third one?
Ready.
Okay. We have three reversals. You have to tell me which one of these three reversals Donald Trump did not make. Okay. So, number one, before becoming president, he said NATO is obsolete. And then after he became president, he said NATO is no longer obsolete. Or number two, before becoming president, Donald Trump said about unemployment, the numbers are phony. These are all phony numbers. Numbers given to politicians to look good. These are phony numbers. And then after... he became president, the White House press secretary Sean Spicer said, "I talked to the president prior to this, and he said, to quote him very clearly, they may have been phony in the past, but it's very real now." Or number three, he endorsed Republican candidate for U.S. Senate Roy Moore in Alabama, and then when he lost, he said that he was right the first time for backing Moore's opponent in the primary. So the question is, Hunter, which one of these three reversals did Donald Trump not make?
Ooh. I'm going to say the second one.
The second one, unemployment statistics.
Yes.
No, this was a trick question. They all were reversals that Donald Trump made.
Ow!
I'm sorry. We had to throw one of those in here. Okay, I promise, no more trick questions, all right? No more trick questions.
Okay.
All right. Okay, here we have another true or false. Before he ran for president, Donald Trump used the phrase, "Happy Holidays and Merry Christmas," and after he decided to run for office, he started saying only Merry Christmas and insinuated President Obama wouldn't say it. True or false?
Oh, well, this is tricky. Because I did hear that he said happy holidays this week. But I know he's all about the war on Christmas. So I think I'm going to say false.
No, nope. It's true. Yep, it's true. He used the phrase Happy Holidays and Merry Christmas before he ran for president. And then as soon as he started running, he decided to use only Merry Christmas. And yet you may be right. He may have said Happy Holidays, so maybe I have to give you a half point on that. But he's been trying to say only Merry Christmas since then.
Typical liberal talk.
I know he's about that war on Christmas.
Okay.
I was going to say, typical liberal talk host to get spread fake news there, Mike.
Yeah, I'm sorry. All right. Okay. Okay, here's the next one. True or false again. Donald Trump said he would, quote, never eat Oreos again after parent company Nabisco announced they were moving production to Mexico.
That sounds true to me.
That is true. That is true. That is what he said. I don't know if he ever did. We know he's got this thing with, is it Coke or Diet Coke? I can't remember. But I don't know if he, is it Diet Coke? And I think he famously said, you never see a skinny person drinking a Diet Coke.
Yeah.
All right. On to the next one here. Again, we're playing, that was the year that wasn't. You guess the real stuff versus the fake stuff.
And I got to say, we got to get Hunter some competition here as well.
Yeah, if somebody thinks that they can do better than Hunter, Hunter's blown a couple of these. He's not acing it. If you think he can do better, Hunter, 952-946-6205. We'll bring you in. All right? We can do one-on-one, okay? Okay, here's the next one. True or false? Trump visited firefighters in West Palm Beach this week and spent a lot of time bragging about the stock market. True or false?
Could you repeat that question?
Sure. Okay. Donald Trump visited firefighters in West Palm Beach this week and spent a lot of time bragging about the stock market.
I'm going to say false.
False? No, he did. He spent a lot of time... He spent at least maybe about two to three minutes of his 10 minutes with the fire department talking about how the stock market had gone up and how wonderful it was, and it was all his doing. All right. Next one.
What a
hero. Yeah, what a hero. Here we go. Another one. True or false? President Donald Trump once used a question about anti-Semitism to brag about his 2016 election victory.
True?
That is correct. True. he was at a news conference with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, where an Israeli reporter asked Trump a question about the contribution his own rhetoric may have made to the United States' recent rise in anti-Semitic violence. And he talked about his election victory, and he does that a lot. He once chatted with three Reuters reporters in April, handed each of them a map memorializing his own win over Hillary Clinton, and he's bragged about it at a Republican Party retreat after the inauguration and during an appearance with the president of Romania. He has bragged about his 2016 election victory in public 50 times, according to the Slate.com Trump Brag Tracker. The longest he has gone without bragging is 30 days. The average time between Trump brags is 8 days.
Really? Okay. That's got to be shorter than 30.
Didn't want it to be true.
You didn't want it to be true. I'm sorry. You should know. If you didn't want it to be true, it's true. Okay. We have another contestant online. Hunter, you've missed a couple here. We're going to have you hang on, but we're going to see if somebody else can take one here. We have Reverend Jack. Reverend Jack from Minneapolis.
Hey. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you okay. Can you hear me okay,
right,
Reverend Jack?
I can't. Happy New Year. And by the way, you know those maps that he was giving out with the Electoral College upon are laminated, apparently. I don't know why I find that hilarious that he's got those laminated maps he hands out to people with the red and the blue. But anyways, you go. I'm sorry. What's up?
Okay. All right. We're on to true and false here.
Okay.
Okay, this is, here's the headline. A law has passed. All child support in the United States will end beginning in 2018, thanks to Donald Trump and the U.S. Congress.
I'm going with false.
That is correct. It is false. It was a piece by somebody made to look like TMZ. And this is a payment the president cannot eliminate by a vote or executive order. They're individual payments set by court orders. This was a piece recirculated, a false story that was first published in September, and it's connected to a prank news site. So,
got it.
All right.
All right.
You're one for one here. Let's give you another one, Reverend Jack.
Here's the
headline. Woman fired for flipping off Trump's motorcade receives 453,673 job offers.
Ooh, it's a tough one. I know that happened. I know she got fired, but I'm just going to play the odds and go with true.
You're going to say true? No, no. That's false.
That's too bad.
Yeah, Julie Briskman said she got new interest in her career, but not the number of job offers specified in an extra newsfeed piece tagged as satire. She was fired after raising her middle finger at Donald Trump. But she did attract more than 17,000 new Twitter followers, though. So
nice. Right on.
All right. Okay, we'll give you another Donald Trump here one.
Right.
Did Donald Trump tweet or say, watch protest yesterday, but was under the impression that we just had an election? Why didn't these people vote? Celebs hurt cause badly. Did he tweet that?
I think he did say that. I believe that's true. He said something quite similar. He didn't say that.
Yes, he did. He did. He did say that. Okay, we got one more for us here. Jack, you've been doing pretty well. Did French President Emmanuel Macron kind of tweak Donald Trump's Make America Great Again slogan for a global science initiative after Trump pulled out of the U.S. Paris Accord and slashed federal science budget? Did Macron offer researchers a home in France and his Make Our Planet Great Again competition?
I'm going to go with true just because I hope it's true.
It is true.
All right. Nice.
He awarded grants to 18 climate scientists, including 13 from the United States. So.
Oh, sweet. Right.
Brent, have you been keeping score here? I don't think we've been keeping score.
I think there were four questions. I think I got three right. Do you agree with that over there, Hunter? Or?
Yeah, I've been tabulating the results for Reverend Jack. At least you are correct. For Hunter, sorry, I have no idea.
We have no idea, sure. Hunter. We didn't care.
No, right on. Well.
Thank you both for playing the game today. There are no winners or losers on this game. Just people we laugh at.
We're all winners on AM 950, and we're all losers after the election last November. Thanks, man. I love what you do, Mike. You're awesome, man. You're fantastic. Thanks. Keep it up.
All right. And Hunter, thanks for calling in on your day off. I appreciate that. Okay.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
We are going to take a break, and when we come back, some of the better sound or weirder sound from the year. That's all next here on the Mike McEntee Show.
So Hada Krismica just snuck up on us, and you've waited and waited all year to get your carpet cleaned. Getting your carpet zero-res clean makes your home healthier to get rid of the bacteria and dust mites and dander lurking in your carpet. This month, get three-room zero-res clean starting at $129. Plus, this month, you can get great deals getting your air duct zero-res clean. So call zero-res today because your family deserves a clean, fresh-smelling home for the holidays. That's 952-ZERO-RES or visit ZeroResMN.com. Zero Res, spell it backward or forward, it spells the same.
Turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. We have families waiting for a car. You know, over 85% of unemployed are successful in finding and keeping a job if they have dependable transportation. A car plus a job equals a life changed. 612-919-5526. We have families waiting for a car. 919-5526 or autotech.org.
Seasteads, the family-owned flooring business that's been serving the Twin Cities for 100 years, has plenty of carpet and sheet vinyl stock to choose from and can help you with your wood and laminate needs too. Seasteads will come to your home, provide a free estimate, and professionally install their quality brand-name flooring products. For your next flooring project, call the trusted, experienced experts at Seasteads 651-224-5474, located across from the new Saints Stadium and online at seasteadscarpet.com.
Mishad Cooley Erickson, a mechanical and electrical consulting engineering firm in Minneapolis, supports inclusivity by designing spaces for all user groups, honoring inclusivity and respect. These spaces include gender-neutral family restrooms and nursing mothers' rooms. For example, Mishad Cooley Erickson has designed lactation rooms for traveling mothers at the MSP International Airport. Designing these spaces has changed the expectations of similar facilities in airports around the country. Mishad Cooley Erickson designed safe and comfortable environments for occupants who are their number one priority.
Welcome back to the closing minutes of the closing show for the year here, the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950. So glad you could stick with us. I got a little programming note here, though, for us. We had mentioned yesterday that we're going to be playing back the CD2 congressional forum between Angie Craig and Jeff Erdman, the two DFL candidates who are running to face off against Jason Lewis. That is going to be Monday night, not Tuesday, Monday night at 10 o'clock here on AM 950 radio. So tune in for that. If you're interested in that race, it's something you should hear. You should hear both candidates. So some of the best sound from the year. We were going through the files. Actually, Brett and Hunter were going through the files. And see if you can remember this hit from the early days of the Trump administration.
People should be concerned that the president posted somewhat of an incoherent tweet last night and that it then stayed up for hours.
No.
Why did it stay up so long? Is no one watching this?
No, I think the president and a small group of people know exactly what he meant. Blake.
Wait a minute. What does Sean Bennett mean? Blake. What does he mean?
Blake.
What is Covfefe?
Blake.
No, but did you get
Blake
itself?
Blake.
Is at this point with Beck, is at this point with Paris, is it fully removed?
Yeah, Covfefe. Don't we miss Sean Spicer? You know, remember when he first came on the scene?
Photographs of the inaugural proceedings were intentionally framed in a way, in one particular tweet, to minimize the enormous support that had gathered on the National Mall. This was the first time in our nation's history that floor coverings have been used to protect the grass in the mall. That had the effect of highlighting any areas where people were not standing, while in years past, the grass eliminated this visual.
Yeah. Yeah, that was right. Because, you know, so many people showed up for Donald Trump's inauguration. And of course, we can't forget Kellyanne Conway with defending Trump's travel ban by making a reference to two Iraqi refugees who she described
masterminds behind the Bowling Green massacre.
Yeah, the Bowling Green massacre. All those things that we didn't know about because it didn't happen. That's it for the show. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next year. I'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.